We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning and welcome to the morning briefing for Monday, November 12th, 13th, 2017. Yeah, it's the 13th, not the 12th. I'm your host, Eric Dane. Jake Hughes is your producer, and today we're going to kick off the week with a nice little program. Coming up, we'll play our interview with Marion Polk, National Commander of AMVETS and Coast Guard veteran. National Commander Polk has plans for his year in office at AMVETS, and he outlines them for us in our chat. Later, we'll talk to Deborah Snyder, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and pilot, about the Operation Renewed Hope Foundation. That's an organization she established to help homeless veterans. All that and more coming up on today's morning briefing that kicks off right now as we welcome Jake Hughes to the studio. Jake, how are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good, Eric. How about you?
I'm all right. Did you have a good Veterans Day weekend?
I did. I indulged myself in a little bit of discounted and free food. I was able to sort of stay in. I visited Arlington to visit my granduncle, and it was a good day.
Yeah, we didn't do any free food stuff. My wife finally got back about midnight on Friday, so Saturday, technically. She got back, so I was able to sleep in on Saturday, which was good. Slept a lot yesterday, too, which was good, but still exhausted. Just run down. Need a vacation. That's what I need. Like a week by myself on an island someplace, just nothing but me, someone to make food and bring drinks. That's all I want. Just about 5 days of that. So
the American dream, man.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that. Didn't really do, wasn't able to do much because of the exhaustion. Still not feeling great. My throat's still been bothering me all week. And I've been waking up like all dehydrated. My lips chapped and all that stuff. I think I need to get a humidifier. That may be what I need because I think it coincided with us turning the heat on in the house because it got cold. Kind of dries everything out on you, you know. But yeah. Other than that, you know, kind of an all right weekend, I guess. Just trying to relax and recover as much as I could before my wife leaves again on tomorrow.
Again?
Yeah, she'll be good. She's going back to Houston. She was just there for 7 days, home for three, back for three. So, yeah, it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, really a little bit.
Really is. People are like, oh, she's back though, right? Yeah, for like 3 days. And she's gone again. I tell you this, single parenthood of a, you know, preschooler. If he were in school, wouldn't be as much of a problem because I'd have time by myself before he gets home at four to do something, take a nap, relax. Nope, I pick him up as soon as I leave here, and I've got him on my own until 8 p.m., and then I go right to bed after that, basically, an hour or two after that, after I eat dinner and do laundry and stuff like that. Zero time for anything, which is it's frustrating and exhausting, you know. That's the way that it is. But a big Veterans Day weekend, there was a lot going on between the end of last week and this week. Our friend Rob Jones finished his 31st marathon in Washington, D.C. 31 marathons in 31 days. Remember, he started off, not only did he do 31 in 31 days, the first one he did on a different continent. The first one he ran was over in London, England. And then he flew back over here for number two the next day, a straight month of marathons. And unfortunately, I was unable to make it out there on Saturday, but I saw a lot of the video of a lot of people who did. He had a big crowd with him in D.C. running that final marathon and, you know, had crowds all around the country following him, and then had like the Marine Corps and the Commandant tweeting out to him this weekend, congratulating him on finishing that accomplishment. And then, you know, I think we'll have him on the show here before too long to tell us about what he's doing next, because he's already done a lot. He biked across the country. He's run 31 marathons in 31 days. What's coming up next? I don't know.
But, how do you top that?
Yeah, I don't know if you can, but I'm guessing because of what we know about Rob, he's probably not done trying to raise awareness for issues for our veterans, specifically the disabled veterans. We've got some news stories that came out towards the end of last week. One of them, Gunnery Sergeant Joseph Felix. He is the drill instructor at Paris Island, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, in the 3rd Marine Recruit Battalion, I believe it was. The Thumpin' 3rd, as Kate Germano told us they were known. Gunnery Sergeant Felix will spend the next 10 years in prison after a court-martial sentenced him Friday for abusing recruits, of whom jumped over a stairwell and fell to his death after Felix slapped him. He'll also be reduced in rank to E1, forfeit all pay and allowances, and will ultimately receive a dishonorable discharge.
Wow.
So that's... interesting. Here's the thing. And I saw people talking about this weekend, so that's why I'm going to bring it up. He gets 10 years. Bo Bergdahl got none.
Yeah, that's a little messed up.
That's, you know, when you see things like this and you go 10 years and yes, a recruit killed himself after being slapped. That's different than throwing, like if he had thrown that recruit over the stairwell, then all right, put him in prison for the rest of his life. Certainly this sentence seems okay to me. I don't see anything wrong with it. 10 years, forfeiting all pay, reducing rank to E1, dishonorable discharge. That's E7 to E1. That's a pretty big drop. And there were substantial issues other than that, but 10 years for that and none for Bo Bergdahl.
Yeah, I think the problem, I don't know necessarily if it's a problem, but what the judge was thinking was he was taking the 5 years in captivity into consideration when making the sentence. Yeah. And people aren't sure if he should have done that because he did it to himself.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah.
That's my official position.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions that people have about that, where this guy, Felix, definitely not a good guy, did a lot of things that were certainly uncalled for, to say the very least. Criminal acts, yeah, it would seem that there were definitely some. You don't go, in this day and age, you don't go slapping recruits and stuff, and you can say, oh, yeah, it's too soft, and that, you know what, if you think the Marine Corps is too soft these days, go see what they did in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't think they're too soft at all. It's just a different era. You don't slap recruits. You don't put your hands on them. You don't hit them. That's not what you do at boot camp. And this guy, 10 years reduced to E1, forfeiting all pay. Whereas the Army is looking at, hey, is Bo Bergdahl deserved back pay for his time over there?
Yeah.
If he gets that back pay, then you're going to see some, you think you're seeing people complain about it now? If he gets a couple $100,000 in back pay and doesn't serve a single day in jail, you're going to see some very, very angry people. You're already seeing some very angry people. But with this one, prosecutors argued that Felix targeted at least 3 Muslim recruits for abuse. Marine veteran Rakan Hawez, born in Iraqi Kurdistan, testified that Felix ordered him to get inside a commercial dryer and called him ISIS and other things like that. He did not turn the dryer on while the guy was in there, so you know, I guess it could have been worse. There are just a bunch of horrifying stories in this guy's background, but this is the kind of sentence I think people would have been happy with if it were for Bergdahl, who just got the dishonorable discharge, reduced him right to E1, but he was only like an E2 when it happened. I mean, he was walking around with sergeant stripes on. It's because they automatically promoted him, which, again, people were a bit upset about that, but that's just the way that the regulations work. This guy, this was a gunnery sergeant. This was a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan. Apparently, he was an air traffic controller. That was his job in the Marine Corps. But now he's going to be a nothing. Dishonorable discharge, E1. This is a, you know, married guy, 4 daughters. Basically just testified before being sentenced and asking for leniency, saying that I am a shattered man as I stand before you. The girls in my life are the only thing that are keeping the pieces together. So his 4 daughters. I don't know if he is still married, but he definitely has 4 daughters anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, a family to take care of, and he's not going to be able to do that now. You can't use that to... I guess you could. You could use that as a mitigating circumstance. Like, well, this is a father of 4 and he's trying to keep his family together. That really has no bearing on the case itself. Just like Bergdahl's 5 years in the Taliban prisonhood, essentially being kept by the Taliban, it doesn't really have all that much bearing on the actual charges against him. You know, those are just mitigating circumstances. In Bergdahl's, with a much bigger microscope on it, those mitigating circumstances were used to not put him in jail at all. Not a single day spent in jail for Bergdahl. And he may get this back pay. Oh, I'm telling you, Jake, if that comes out and he gets that, you're going to see some big time pushback from the military and veteran community.
You're right. But part of me understands why this Marine gunnery sergeant was charged so harshly, because it's hard to explain how seriously the TRADOC and the training command in both the Army and the Marine Corps takes not hazing and harming the privates. Let me tell you a quick story. There was a drill sergeant that was in my platoon that got moved from another company because he was walking in the breezeway and a private came running around a corner, and the guy instinctively sort of pushed away to him and the guy fell down. Because of that, he was given basically a negative counseling and moved to a different company because he accidentally knocked this kid down. So to purposely target him and be slapping them, I would have thrown the book at him too.
Yeah. I mean, but here's what people are saying. People are not saying this guy shouldn't have gotten that kind of sentence. They're saying, well, if he got this sentence, then Bergdahl should have gotten 20 years. You know, if he got 10 years and E1 and dishonorable discharge, Bergdahl should have gotten even worse than that, because he, again, basically surrendered to the enemy is what he did, almost defected. Was that his intent? No. But if you leave outside of a combat outpost like that in the middle of the night in Afghanistan, that's the only thing that can happen to you, essentially. I mean, that's what he did by leaving, whether it was his intent or not. He essentially defected to the other side is what he did. This guy, on the other hand, did horrible things, but I don't know. I see Bergdahl's crime as being at least as bad, if not worse, than what this, Buck Private Felix did.
The argument can be made, and I agree that at the end of the day, I do think Bergdahl should have seen some sort of jail time, but I don't know. I think what also went into it was the fact that it was not Bergdahl's intent to surrender to the enemy. He had the harebrained, completely insane idea of walking to another FOB. Yeah. But I do think that intent had something to do with the sentencing.
Well, and that's what he says. This is someone who left his post, so you don't know what to believe. You don't know, do you believe everything that Bo Bergdahl says? I don't know if I do. So there you go. I mean, you know, we talk about intent. It's hard to tell what someone's intent is, even if they tell you why. I've told people I intended to do things for one reason when that wasn't the actual case. For there are various reasons that one can do that. One reason to do that would be to try and reduce any charges that you might face when you come back to a court-martial. Keeping it on the legal front and keeping it with the Marine Corps in this one, you remember the Marines who were arrested and charged for urinating on corpses of Taliban fighters?
Those guys.
Well, one of them, Staff Sergeant Joseph W. Chamblin, was reduced in rank to sergeant in order to pay $500 after he pled guilty to charges stemming from the 2011 incident in Afghanistan. It became a national scandal. Basically, the video was posted on YouTube in 2012. Chamblin was basically pled guilty and was convicted. So here's the deal. That has now been vacated, basically. And the reason is the former commandant, General James Amos, former commandant of the Marine Corps, had illegally interfered with the legal process at the outset. First judge told him, hey, I want these guys hammered. I want this at a general court-martial. The judge said, I don't think this is deserving of a general court-martial. I mean, what they did, was it gross? Yeah. Was it incredibly disrespectful to an enemy or anyone? Yes. However, general court-martial is for, like, you know, defecting and Bo Bergdahl. There you go. That's a general court-martial right there. Or assaulting recruits and stuff like that. These guys, they had already killed these people, which, you know, some would argue that's the greater issue in the grand scheme of things. And whether, you know, when someone's dead, urinating on them, incredibly disrespectful, gross, there's a lot of things you could say about it. Criminal? I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's more, it seems, I've heard from other Marines that General Amos was more worried about the public image than the Marines themselves.
Yeah. Well, the court ruled this is an unusually flagrant example of unlawful command influence. We find that UCI, it's unlawful command influence, this direct and occurring at this level is highly corrosive to public trust. In an affidavit, the judge, the original judge who was removed, wrote that Commandant Amos asked him why he did not feel that the accused Marine should be sent to a general court-martial, which is reserved for the most serious offenses. Waldhauser said he did not believe the cases warranted it. Amos said he could appoint a new convening authority. The commandant later admitted that he had crossed the line and told the judge he was being replaced. to avoid the appearance of interfering with the case. whoa. Well, this judge who disagreed with you, you replaced him. That has the appearance of interfering with the case. So, yeah, essentially they've vacated the conviction or the plea against Champlin. So he will now get his $500 back, I guess. I don't know. I think he got out around that time, too. So I don't think he was able to stay in. But, yeah, very interesting thing. Here's a less awful news story, and this is one that we reported on a while ago, Jake. We talked to somebody about this a while ago. Shopping at the exchange online. We're able to do it now.
Woohoo!
Yeah, Saturday was the day. For AFIS and, I found out, also for the Navy Exchange System.
Really? The NEX is doing it too?
Yeah. They were just really bad at publicizing it. AFIS was, you know, months ago. I mean, we talked to somebody back in like June about this when it was announced. The Navy Exchange, I thought, up until last week, I thought, well, I guess they're not taking part in it for some reason. Maybe they don't need the extra money as badly. I don't know. Then an old Navy buddy of mine, Steve Smith, he sent me a link. Hey, look, Navy Exchange is doing it too. I'm like, what? But they didn't tell anybody. What are you doing? But here's the deal. So you're now able to basically go online and register. You have to do it through, there are these various services that are available out there that can verify you as a veteran. Like when I signed up for VetTix, as an example, I just had to put in like my last four and I think my date of enlistment or something like that, which is sometime in August, a long, long time ago.
In a galaxy far, far away.
No, sorry. Certainly was. Stamford, Connecticut. That's a galaxy very far away. So you basically register and you verify that you're a veteran. Then you have the ability to shop online. Now, you're not able to walk into the store like and just, hey, here I am, because of course you need base access for that. If you're retired, like you have access to the exchanges, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you can use those. I can't. I did not retire. I don't have a retiree ID card. But I can now shop with them online, and here's the benefit of that. Free shipping and tax-free as well. So you're saving, depending on how big, especially for your biggest purchases, you could be saving a substantial amount of money. Say there's a 7% sales tax on something that is, let's say it's $100, then you would be paying another $7 with tax on top of that. And then how much for shipping, depending on how much it weighed, you could be saving, you know, on something like that. You're looking at probably saving like $20 minimum.
Yeah.
From what you would, ordering it someplace else. There are other places that offer free shipping, but nobody offers tax-free stuff. Again, this is only eligible to veterans. Doesn't matter what your branch of service was, Army and Air Force Exchange Service, it's the same stuff available to those who shop there normally. And this is kind of an effort that they're making to combat companies like Amazon that have such a wide reach and are able to. I mean, when I was in Afghanistan, I ordered everything that I got off of Amazon while
me
was
too.
Over there, you know, and it would come pretty quickly. Now, Amazon would do like, you know, the overnight shipping or whatever. Well, that overnight was only to the U.S. military post office in New York, I believe it is. And then from there, it would take God knows how long to get over to me, but usually not that bad. But if I had had the option, I guess I did at that point to shop at the exchange. I just never did because it was easier to shop at Amazon. Now, I'm going to today, when I go home, I'm going to register for this, check it out, see what the deal is, and see how easy it is. See if not only that it's available to us now, that it has the ease of use that Amazon does or the easy searchability, because some of the problems that I've seen with military-related websites that try to be like their civilian counterparts, they don't take into effect the ease of use, the easeability or whatever it's
usability.
You would call it. Yeah, usability. It's often better in theory than in actuality. However, these stores, I mean, the exchange system is pretty good. As far as things on base that operate properly, they operate about as well as anything on a military base, I would say.
Yeah, I always went to the exchange. I still do sometimes. If I don't feel like going, or if I need something that's not at Walmart, I'll go to the exchange.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have access to those for me. I don't, you do. So, you know, you're able to go on there and get that stuff. You have access to, like, the commissary and all that stuff, too,
yes.
Right? Yeah, you get to do all that good stuff. Yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting to see what it is exactly. Now, here's the thing. The exchange, of course, part of the DOD, according to Military Times, reported earnings of $384 million last year. 5 years ago, they had projections of $180 million in losses. So through online shopping and they're realizing like, hey, people are preferring to stay at home and order through their computer rather than actually going down to the exchange. They basically increased their shoppership, their user numbers through that, and turned everything around. I mean, 180 million to 384 million. That's for $564 million increase in sales in a 5-year period.
Well, you're right. But the big problem is going to be, again, like you said, usability. Like, for example, my sister and her husband have these little tags they have with Amazon.com where they can literally push a button and it will automatically order them a new supply of like paper towels or something.
Oh yeah, no, I have that for my my vitamin, my daily multivitamin that I take. Like it, every 2 months or something, they ship me a new one. It's like 60 pills or whatever that come with them. And of course, if you're taking one a day, then every 2 months you should get the new one. It arrives right around the same time. So there's that going on now. Yeah, are you going to have the ability to do things like that? I don't know. And Amazon is making efforts to stretch into other things. There's talk about them getting involved in prescription medications, which would be interesting because Amazon has also shown the ability to operate at a loss. They've done that in several years, part of it because of their rapid expansion, that the people who are in charge of expanding the business spend so much money on buying these other companies that they take over. It kind of offsets the profits of people shopping there, but it'll be interesting to see. Now, the exchanges have already turned around their fortunes by opening up, just having online shopping available to retirees and active duty, right? Now you're going to bring in the veteran community. And the veteran community is so large compared to the retiree and active duty community. If 10% of veterans take part in this, it's going to increase their fortunes that much more.
You're right.
It's going to benefit them, even if just one does. I mean, there's no cost to them, really. It's just more shoppers being available to do there. And the tax-free thing, listen, they're a special government entity, essentially. So that's why they get the tax-free thing. And it's available to us now online only. But yeah, if you're interested in that, you can go to the AFIS website. You can go to the NEX website. I believe they're totally separate. So you can go to, shopmyexchange.com. And then the verification site is vetverify.org, which I can't remember if this is the same one that I used or not. So you've got, here you go. All of them. This is Army and Air Force Exchange Service, Navy Exchange, Marine Corps Exchange, and even the Coast Guard Exchange. You can stop at all of them, but you need to verify that you are a veteran first. Let's see, how do you do it? You know, maybe I'll do this during the next break and then we'll be able to talk about it tomorrow morning or something like that. Click here to begin verification. So there's a site there. You put in your first name, last name, social security, your whole social security number, email, birth date, branch of service. And that's it, looks like. So, yeah, I'm imagining this is going to be pretty quick to go through there. Oh, look, autofill settings for someone who doesn't work here anymore.
Uh-oh.
You can sign on there for them. It's a good option to have available to you. You already had it available. For me, it's going to be nice for me and my wife to be able to go on there and look and see, like, hey, we're looking for something, and kind of price verify.
Right.
Where, here's the thing, even if Amazon has something, and because we're Prime members, we have free shipping 2 days later or whatever. If we're still paying taxes on it, it's going to cost more. And if it's a big ticket item, it's going to cost a lot more. It may not make as much sense for the smaller things where it's going to come down to a speed issue, like how fast can we get it? So there are some things you can order on Amazon now where you get them like the same day. How crazy is that? It depends on where you live. There are same day deliveries. Like if you're in New York City, same day delivery on almost anything on Amazon, which is crazy. Now, I'm not saying the exchange services are going to have that by any stretch of the imagination, but if you go to that website that I just told you about, it's holy geez, where did the thing go? Yeah, anyway, I lost it. So vetverify.org is the website to begin your verification. Then you've got the Navy Exchange, AFIS, Marine Corps Exchange, and Coast Guard Exchange. And if you are a veteran, and that's someone with an honorable discharge, basically, anything other than honorable or below. So no other than honorable, bad conduct, or dishonorable. Anything above that, general, honorable, all those different things, you are eligible now to shop at the exchange. And just in time for the holidays, man, just in time for Christmas time. And I bet you there will be some deals on there. Let's see. Save 15%. Oh, the military star card. Wow. You know, when you go onto these websites, you see things that you just haven't heard about for years.
Yeah, I had one of those back when I was at Fort Riley. Yeah. And that was 2005. Oh, my God.
You know what I remember? When we got to, I think it was Kuwait. They made us get the Eagle card, I think it was called, for like buying stuff at the exchange over in Afghanistan. And then it turns out I go to RC North, where everything is run by the Germans and the Norwegians and the Swedes, and there is no AFI. So I was like,
you remember the POGs?
Great. Oh, yeah.
The little
coin things. Yeah, I do remember those. Well, yeah, I got over there, and then realized almost immediately, like, oh, so now I have $40 or whatever on this card that I have no way to use up here, and couldn't use it until I got to Bagram Air Base almost a year later. Oh boy. You're listening to The Morning Briefing here on CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Eric Dame and Jake Hughes here with you. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to talk with Marion Polk. He's a national commander of AMVETS, and he's going to outline everything that he plans for his year in office, which started not that long ago, right here. Stick around.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
Welcome back to The Morning Briefing, CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting Vets every day. My name is Eric Dame. I'm the host. Jake Hughes is your producer on the other side of the glass. And ConnectingVets.com is your website, created by veterans for veterans. And we mean that. Jake and I, for example, 13 years in the Army for him, 13 in the Navy for me, put us together, 26-year E-12. I know, it's as impressive as it sounds. Also, be sure to follow us on social media, where we are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Just a little tap on your phone or click of your mouse, and you will be kept up to date on the latest and greatest affecting you, the veteran community, coming from us, the veteran community. Because of our ties to the military and veteran community, we all have an idea of what you're looking for when it comes to news, information, entertainment, freebies. If you missed out on all that good Veterans Day food that was available for free or at a discount, well, that's your own fault for not checking out Jake's story at ConnectingVets.com that was also put on social media. There's so much great stuff for you, like this story about, if you're a veteranpreneur, a new partnership between LifeLit Media and Zero Hour Media. It's the kind of thing that you might want to know about. It might benefit you as you work to get into the business world. Over the last few months, we've been covering a wonderful program taking place through Harley-Davidson called Mission Thank You. Mission Thank You, for those of you that don't know, essentially allowed Harley-Davidson and Adam Sandoval, motorcycling enthusiast and celebrity, to give out 8 brand new free Harley-Davidsons to 8 deserving military members and or veterans. They just gave away their 8th and final bike this past week up in New York City, and the recipient of that bike joins us now on The Morning Briefing, Mr. Ian Carey. Ian, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's absolutely our pleasure. So before we talk about your new bike, let's talk about Ian. So when did you serve? Sure. Where are you from, and what did you do while you were in?
So I'm from a little town in Severn, Maryland, right outside of Baltimore. I'm born and raised here pretty much, and I joined the Navy here back in 2003. I graduated high school in 2002, kind of putted around for a year, and then decided, you know, college, I wasn't ready for college just yet. So joined the Navy in 2003 in October, and I was actually rated as a corpsman. So I had no idea what I was getting into at the time. Just kind of thought that I'd be on the ship somewhere overseas, and you know, lucky break for me, I ended up going straight to Camp Lejeune and doing my first whole enlistment with the Marines. So I was a FMF corpsman with the infantry division over in Camp Lejeune.
Wow. And of course, those are the corpsmen who oftentimes deal with the worst things that a corpsman has to deal with, essentially, those who go sure. and partner with the Marine Corps. Now, did you deploy when you were with the Marines there?
I did. So shortly after, you know, you do field med and everything, I got to my unit, and about 6 months later, I think it was, I went with 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines to Iraq in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And then quick turnaround kind of for us, we came back, and I think it was only about 8 months later, we went back again for our second deployment. And so that was it for my my deploying career in the Navy.
Well, that's still quite a bit more than a lot of people do. And think back to when you got out. You know, you go from being a doc, you go from being the corpsman to being a civilian. What was that transition like for you when you did finally get out of the Navy?
Yeah, I think originally it was really hard. I had a pretty rough time with, even before leaving, once I realized that I was going to kind of step foot into civilian life, the transition I had already started then. Kind of this big anxiety, this big bubble. I had a good family system when I got out to California. My parents were out there, so I decided to join them. But really, I was kind of lost for a while there. It took another year before I figured out I needed to get back into school because I really couldn't get my head straight on where to work and things like that. So one of the things that happened that was pretty fantastic for me was that I went to I used the GI Bill and went to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Prescott, Arizona. There's another one at Daytona, and there was this huge group of veterans that were learning how to fly helicopters and planes, and a lot of them were going to school for engineering, and I kind of meld into that pot pretty quickly, and it ended up being a really good system that I found. You know, surrounding myself with like-minded people and veterans, and you know, they had the same work ethic and things like that. It really helped that kind of 2-3 year transition into normal life where we can kind of joke around with each other and relate to each other and all that. And we did really well in school as a demographic. The veterans did way higher than, did way better than anybody else. Their GPAs were always higher. And it just kind of was like one of those things where you knew that they were there to do, you know, for one thing, and that was to go to school. And so I found that helped a lot from that point on.
Right. And it's oftentimes finding that thing or that place that kind of helps you get over the hump and helps you figure out exactly what you need to be doing with your post-military life. You know, we've found from talking to so many people that there are a lot of differences between all of us, but there are some similarities between your post-military careers that just kind of seem to be somewhat universal. We're speaking with Ian Carey, and Ian is a Navy veteran. He was a Fleet Marine Force Corpsman, a.k.a. a doc with the United States Marine Corps. And that is, you know, it is also, I think, one of the most hallowed things in the entire Marine Corps and Navy. The Fleet Marine Force Corpsman holds a very special place to members of the Navy and Marine Corps team. Was there any difficulty that you dealt with, you know, not having that anymore, that camaraderie, having all those Marines who looked to you every time they had anything from, you know, whether it was a hangnail to a bullet wound, you know, they were coming to dock for it.
Sure. I think that's a big piece of it is you have this great responsibility coming out of the military. Well, it's not just my job. I know across the board, everybody has these. I always laugh about how, you know, when we were deployed, I'd see somebody, we'd be attached to a tank unit or a tank command, and I'd pop out and see this 20-some-year-old driving this, you know, 60-ton tank, and the amount of responsibility is huge, and that's kind of how I felt, too. I had, at one point, when I became senior line corps, I had 220-some Marines and sailors underneath me that I was responsible for, whether it was just dental, you know, appointments or getting everybody sick call, and, you know, responding to the first sergeant and telling them what's going on with all your guys. And then you switch into a role where you might, you know, for a part-time working at a job where that responsibility is not there anymore. You don't feel as important. I think that's one of the things that's pretty difficult, especially with my Marines, is they go from kind of the top of the world, you know, tip of the spear. They come home and they're, you know, their family and their friends are always happy to see them. And they've got these great welcome parties. And then all of a sudden that's all gone. And I think that's probably one of the tougher parts, is kind of finding your place when you go from all this responsibility and all these people counting on you and you counting on other people, to then kind of, even with a, you know, huge family around you, you're still kind of alone. So that was tough. That was definitely tough. But again, you know, finding those friends, finding those people that you can, those like-minded people was really big for me. And I know it helps with a lot of people as well.
Now, Ian, after you've gotten out, have you stayed connected to the military in any way, either through volunteering, charitable work, professionally? I mean, do you still have any connections still to the military?
Sure. I mean, I work for the government now. I've always been in like a security field for the past 10, 12 years. I've been kind of working for the government. So somehow I always find the pockets of, you know, employees that I work with that are all veterans. And so with that, I mean, right now I work with a team of like 30 guys and gals, and there's probably two that aren't veterans now. So there's always a connection some way for me. I've also worked on contracts where I'm working for the military. So I gravitate towards it most definitely. I've also done like a couple charitable events with like Iraq and Afghanistan veterans and Wounded Warriors and things like that. And of course, you know, I keep in touch with all my buddies and all my friends. And, you know, whenever we can get a chance to get together on reunions, just even if there's just like 10 guys or so, we try to do that every year. So.
Right. And that is probably one of the reasons that Ian Carey, who we're speaking to right now, was selected by Adam Sandoval and Harley Davidson as one of the final recipients of a Mission Thank You motorcycle. That Mission Thank You program gave 8 brand new free Harley Davidsons to deserving veterans and military members. So, Ian, how did this come about? Were you totally surprised when you received the Harley Davidson?
Completely. This was an absolutely unreal experience. So I guess it was months and months and months ago. My fiance at the time was, we were sitting up here on the couch and just talking, and it came across the screen. And so, you know, she said, "Hey, we should put you in for this." So, hey, you know, you enter these contests all the time, these lotteries or whatever they are, you know, and you don't expect anything out of it. And so she wrote a brief little essay, nothing too crazy. Just, you know, explained, you know, why she was, it was kind of like, here's, you know, this is your hero thing. And she wrote a nice little thing on it. And I guess I got picked. There's like 10,000 entrants. And somehow it came across the board and they picked me. So at first I thought it was all kind of spam mail and fake. I got this email that said, you know, congratulations, you won this prize. But the prize at the time was just a trip. It wasn't anything else.
Right.
And so I kind of had to sort through that, make sure that was legit. And then I read more about the, you know, I've been following it for a little bit, and I said, oh, wait a second, because it comes from a third party. I said, this is the Harley Davidson. This is the Mission Thank You. And so then I got a couple phone calls, and I'm like, wow, this is real. So I had won just a trip to go to New York City. And yeah. So throughout the campaign, they bring up finalists, and there's 4 or 5, 10 finalists or whatever, and then they give away this motorcycle. So I still, you know, kept saying, well, there's probably someone a lot more, you know, deserving of this than I am, but I'll go. This is going to be fun. And then I got up there, and it was all kind of a big ruse. It was funny. They planned their little white lie. They planned it on so many good levels that I actually did not know that I was receiving the motorcycle until it shot directly on air. So if there's a clip that you see where my face looks kind of, I just kind of look dumbfounded at the very spot of it, that's 100% real, because they all tricked me very well. And so it didn't actually set in until pretty much 30 minutes afterwards. I still had no idea what was going on.
And of course, receiving a new motorcycle, the actual ceremony itself, when you realized what was happening, of course, you said it took about 30 minutes afterwards until you totally understood everything that had happened. But when you realized that you were going to be getting a brand new free 2018 Harley Davidson, what was that experience like?
I mean, I just kept saying, I think the theme for me for the weekend was unreal. I just kept saying over and over again, this is just, it didn't, you know, I couldn't completely wrap my head around it until, I mean, honestly, probably yesterday was probably the full day that we were flying back. And I just went, wow, it's just this, that to happen. Because not only did I win the bike, the next day for, that was a Friday. So then on, and it was on TV, which was crazy. And then Saturday, we rode a brand new motorcycle. My wife, they got my wife to come up from Baltimore. She took the train up, and we were in the Veterans Day parade with the Wounded Warrior Project. We rode out in front of them for Harley Davidson, and you're downtown New York City, and you're riding on this bike with a couple other people, and there's 1,000 people behind you. I mean, it was just, again, unreal was the theme for me.
Yeah, and that's the other added thing to it that we didn't mention is that you got to ride in the biggest Veterans Day parade in the nation, I believe, the one in New York City. Adam Sandoval out there riding with you on your brand new bike. I mean, could you have ever imagined when you were down there working at Lejeune with the Marines, could you have ever imagined that your service and what you've done as a veteran would lead to you being not only in the Veterans Day parade, but being in such a spotlighted, highlighted role in a brand new Harley Davidson that you were given?
No, I mean, and that's kind of the thing is that, you know, kudos to Harley Davidson and Adam Sandoval and everybody that did this. I mean, there were so many moving parts with this, and to feel as appreciated as I did was incredible. I mean, I know that it's tough a lot of times, again, like I was mentioning earlier, when you feel kind of isolated in a little bit, but there's people out there like Adam who, he never served, but he's serving now. His role is solely just to go out and help veterans, and he genuinely loves what he does. And it was funny because when I first met him, he was trying to keep up the little white lie that there were still people coming in and that I had not actually won. And so he was kind of like, he's standoffish. I was like, oh, man, this guy must be he's like a celebrity, you know, he's too cool. But then when everything kind of, when he told me, like I said, I looked at him right before they handed me the keys and the motorcycle. I said, "You guys tricked me," and he said, "Yeah." And then they rolled right the camera. I laughed, and then afterwards, I realized, I mean, the biggest heart ever, and he's a complete stranger, and he's out there helping other complete strangers. It's what he's doing and his team is doing is incredible. So I never imagined anything like this happening to someone, you know, to me, and it's kind of proof that it can happen, and there are people out there, there are strangers out there that absolutely love servicemen and women. I saw it in the parade. We were riding around. You wouldn't believe how many people were just waving and thumbs up. And, you know, it's just an incredible feeling, incredible experience. And it really shows there are a ton of people that care about the veterans out there. And sometimes it's hard to see that until it's right in your face. And, man, it was right in my face.
And of course, Harley Davidson giving away these 8 bikes. I mean, I don't know what your opinion was of Harley Davidson beforehand, but I imagine it's got to be pretty good right now.
Yeah, I had bought a used Harley Davidson, you know, a couple years ago, and I had sold it, and that was kind of part of the. I don't know if that put me in some bracket or anything, but my at the time fiance had mentioned that I had sold it because we were trying to save up to pay for a wedding, and so that kind of might have helped with that story a little bit. And so now, you know, I've always had Harley. You know, it's kind of like service members and Harley go hand in hand, but this was just so incredible. And to watch, you can watch every one of the stories on Adam Sandoval's page, what they did and how far Harley has gone. I mean, they hooked us up. They hooked my wife up. They gave us all new gear. The bike is incredible. They're going to send it down from the factory, and they've almost accepted me as family right off the bat. I heard a couple times, "Welcome to the Harley Davidson family." And like the director of the legal department came down the road with me, and he was like, "Hey, you know, this year we're going to do this, and next year we're going to do that. Well, I expect to see you at Rolling Thunder." And it was just Harley Davidson went above and beyond, and really, you know, just blew me away at how much they put into this.
They really did. And the Mission Thank You program came to a close just a few days ago, with Ian Carey being given the 8th and final motorcycle and then taking part in the New York City Veterans Day Parade alongside Adam Sandoval and the Harley Davidson crew. So, Ian, you know, if you had a message that you could give to your fellow veterans out there after receiving such a great reward, essentially, for the work that you've been doing both while you were in and then afterwards, what would your message to your fellow vets be?
I think, like I'd say, I'd echo again, basically, you know, the motorcycle aside, there were so many people that I met that were doing such a fantastic job for vets. And these things are out there. These programs are out there. These people are out there. And a lot of them I met had zero service experience. They just, you know, the camera crews, the filming, the people that were working, the PR, they just wanted to do it, and they really enjoyed doing it. And I think that's a big thing that people need to remember, is that especially now, it's a tough time for veterans, because I think a lot of guys and gals feel like they're unappreciated. So I think if you just look at a story like mine and put aside the prize and all that stuff, I mean, that's great. It's hard not to look at the big thing there, but these people really do care. And someone like Adam is out there. Of course, this is what he loves to do, but he decided to sell his house, sell all his things, get on a bike and ride around to help out veterans. And he never served. And so he's one of those guys that you look at and you go, wow, man, there are people that care. So just remember that there's going to be complete strangers that they really do care. They really do support us, and they're out there, and they're out there to help too.
They absolutely are. And we want to thank Ian Carey, Navy veteran, corpsman, Fleet Marine Force corpsman down at Camp Lejeune. And Ian, enjoy that brand new Harley Davidson and stay safe on the roads out there, brother.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. You're listening to the Morning Briefing here on CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. That was Ian Carey, who, you know, Jake, we got to follow Mission Thank You from the beginning to the end. That's one of the coolest stories, that he was able to travel up to New York from Maryland, essentially, go up there, not know he was getting the bike, get the bike, have that register inside of his head, and then it turns out he gets to ride that bike in the New York City Veterans Day Parade. How cool is that?
I would be floored. I mean, just to have that opportunity, to have that honor of riding in that parade, it would be, I can't even imagine how he feels.
Yeah, I mean, what a turn of events where he thought he was maybe just one of the finalists that they flew up there because they didn't say anything about the bike itself. They were just bringing him up there. And then he gets to not only get the bike, but then ride it alongside Adam Sandoval and other members of the Harley-Davidson team. So cool. From the first one that they gave away out in San Diego to our friend Shane Crutchton, to this one that they gave away to one of my fellow Navy veterans and Ian Carey. Really just a great program through Harley that they've been doing over the last, I think the first one they gave away was in like June or July.
So July. Last,
yeah, 4 months or so. 8 bikes in 4 months. That's pretty darn cool. And we've had the opportunity to speak to several of the winners. We talked to the one that they gave the bike to out at Sturgis. We got to talk to Shane, of course, live in studio. And then later Charles Swank. He was the one that got it out at Sturgis. Shane, of course, got his and then rode it up to Sturgis straight from San Diego to Sturgis. And then from Sturgis back to San Diego like 3 days later, because he's a crazy person. We know that.
Naturally.
We saw that from him. He's put together just a little bit differently than most people are. And I mean that in the best way. He went up to Sturgis just to get stuff to bring back and give to his fellow veterans in the San Diego area. So that's why he did the straight shot up there on his brand new Harley Davidson. So really a great thing. And Harley is also doing a lot more for veterans than just giving away those bikes. You know, they have the Harley Davidson Riding Academy, which I believe now is still being offered for $99 to all military personnel, veterans, first responders. That includes, you know, police officers, EMS, fire department, and spouses for just $99. As I've told the story before, In my home state of Connecticut, when I came home from Guam, I was waiting on my car to get shipped back. Didn't have any way to get around, but I did have a new motorcycle that I'd purchased that was waiting for me at Harley Davidson in Danbury, Connecticut. However, I didn't have the motorcycle endorsement on my license. To take that course, again, Harley offers their riding course for $99. It counts towards your motorcycle endorsement. To take that course through the state, the group course, it was like $300 or something like that.
Insane.
$250, I think, something like that. Here's the problem. It was booked all the way through to like October, and this is June. I said, well, no, I need some way to get around. I need a vehicle. I'm renting a car, and that's going to get more and more expensive over time. I ended up paying for the private lesson, which was even more than that. It was like $600.
Oh my gosh.
Something like that. Yeah, $600. Went up there for like five straight days, something like that. And it was just one-on-one, me and this guy riding his big Goldwing. You know, he had one of those huge touring bikes that had like a speaker system and everything. Drove it around like it was a stunt bike. This guy knew what he was doing. So I had a great instructor. Harley Davidson also has great instructors. I know at the one closest to my house, they offer the Riding Academy there. They do all sorts of great events out there as well. I just had mine brought in for a tune-up, first one that it had had in quite a while. They're doing a lot of great stuff for the military. And another thing that they do, storing bikes for free for those who are deploying. Like if you're going over to Iraq or Afghanistan for a year, where are you going to leave your bike? That's a question that a lot of people or motorcycle owners come up with. Not the greatest answer to. They'll leave it at their friend's house. They'll leave it someplace else where it doesn't have a battery tender. You leave a bike unattended for a year, you're probably coming back to a dead battery. You're coming back to who knows what animal has made a home inside of your battery compartment or whatever. There's a lot of things that can happen if it's not stored and cared for properly. Harley Davidson does that for a year. And if it's still a Harley under warranty, that warranty gets extended for the entire duration of while
you're gone. That's a big one. That can get expensive.
It is, you know, because let's say it's still a year, time has passed, and even if the bike's not being ridden, that time can cause issues with the bike that, you know, if the warranty expired, if you have 6 months left on your warranty when you deploy to Afghanistan for a year, you come back, well, your warranty's expired. Nope, not if you do it this way. Your Harley warranty will be extended for, you know, the 6 months that you had it. They'll still be there when you get back. We actually had a case where we were contacted by the family of a soldier who's getting ready to deploy, I think coming up pretty soon here, from down in your neck of the woods, down near Houston. The issue that they had was the places they talked to, nobody could do it because the storms had affected them and it just had been an issue. We were able to work together with our friends at Harley Davidson to find a place, I believe, I want to say Pasadena, Texas, I think. There's a Harley dealership down there, I think it was, that's going to be able to help them out and store that bike while he's gone. So, you know, really, Harley is doing their part to help out the military, and there's a lot of great programs that they have. Mission Thank You has come to an end, but that's not the end of Harley Davidson. In support of the United States military and veteran communities. So yeah, this is a really wonderful thing, and we're happy to have been able to participate in telling the stories of those who received those bikes through Mission Thank You, all the way from Shane in San Diego with that first bike, all the way up to Ian Carey receiving the last one on Veterans Day in New York City. Really a cool story. You know what else is a cool story, Jake?
What's that,
a cool
Eric?
Story is when you've got like veterans who say, like, well, just being a veteran, that's not enough for me. I'm going to start an organization that's going to help out my fellow vets, particularly those who are going through a rough time, particularly those who are homeless. We're going to talk to retired Lieutenant Colonel Deborah Snyder about her organization coming up in just a few moments. And they are doing just that, trying to help the homeless veterans. It's the Morning Briefing. Stick around.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We're CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. At Connecting Vets.
Welcome back to the Morning Briefing, Monday edition, November 13th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer on the other side of the glass, making things stay on track. And ConnectingVets.com is your website, created by veterans for veterans. Because each and every member of our team here at ConnectingVets.com is either a veteran themselves, like myself and Jake, 13 years in the Army for him, 13 in the Navy for me, or very closely related to the veteran community. How close, you ask? Well, how about the spouse of a veteran? How about the child of a veteran? We've got all of those types of people here on our team, which is why we have kind of a unique insight for, you know, an organization trying to provide news, information, entertainment, and benefit awareness to the veteran community. To find out more about it, go to ConnectingVets.com, or just as importantly, follow us on social media. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Our next guest is an Army veteran and a native of Alexandria, Virginia. She retired in 2009 as a lieutenant colonel with 21 years of service as a helicopter pilot in the aviation branch. She currently works for the Department of Defense and is passionate about helping others, especially those who sacrificed so much for this country through military service. Her name is Deborah Snyder, and she conceived of and established Operation Renewed Hope Foundation in 2011, specifically to help homeless veterans. She leads a team of professionals equally dedicated to this challenge, and she joins us now on the Morning Briefing. Deborah, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. So as we mentioned, you retired. You served for 21 years, retiring as a lieutenant colonel and a pilot. But tell us just a little bit more about your service. Where you're from Virginia originally. When did you join, and where did you go, and what did you do while you were in?
Well, I graduated from JMU, James Madison University, in Harrisonburg, Virginia, in 1987. Went right into the Army, served in Korea, in Germany, in Desert Shield and Desert Storm, and Fort Eustis and Fort Lee. So was able to go all over the place, see a lot of nice duty stations, and had a great time.
And thinking back to when you get out, retiring in 2009 as a lieutenant colonel, what was that transition like for you? Do you feel that it went as well as it could have? Do you think there are some things that could have gone better? How do you look at your transition from Lieutenant Colonel Snyder to Deborah, the civilian?
Well, I was lucky to go right into service for the Army. So I work for Headquarters Department of the Army, G8, and the transition was easy for me, but I saw how difficult it was for others to transition, and so that's how I got involved with helping veterans who are homeless.
And, of course, you do that through the Operation Renewed Hope Foundation, which you started up a couple years after your retirement. So where did the idea come from for Operation Renewed Hope Foundation, and how did you get it off the ground in 2011?
Sure. Well, first of all, I learned that there were 68,000 homeless veterans at that time, and it was shocking to me even as a veteran. So I found out that I could do something about it. Started from scratch, didn't know anything about running a nonprofit, but I kind of recruited some other aviators and some other veterans, and we got it started, and now we've helped over 500 veterans and their family members get into or stay in housing.
Which is a fantastic thing. And how do you go about doing that? I mean, what does the Operation Renewed Hope Foundation actually do to achieve their mission goals?
Well, it's a lot of fundraising because what we do is we help veterans get into or stay in housing through security deposits or several months of rent. But it's not just about the money there. It's also about wraparound supportive services so that they can get back on their feet. Here in the D.C. area, the cost of living is high. So you have to make about $50,000 as a single person to pay the rent.
Right.
And so that's what we hope that we can do for all the veterans right here in the area.
And there are so many veterans out there, and I think a lot of us have the image in our mind of the homeless veteran as, you know, kind of a Vietnam-era guy wearing a ball cap, maybe looking disheveled. But there are a lot of different types of homelessness out there, aren't there?
Yeah, and you know what we've seen is more and more families, single mothers that are homeless, living in their vehicles. There's a lot of families that are couch surfing around the nation, and those aren't even counted in the literally homeless population. Every year, there's a point in time count, and as I mentioned, it was 68,000 before and about 40,000 on the last count. So we're getting closer to the zero, but we've got a long way to go.
And do you think we'll ever be able to get, I mean, I kind of doubt that we're ever going to be able to get to a flat zero, but do you believe we can ever have this significantly reduced? I mean, we've already dropped it down from what you said, from 68,000 to about 40,000. That's significant, but do you think we'll ever be able to get it down to zero? And if not, what do you think is an attainable, manageable goal?
Yeah, so I agree with you. I don't think we'll ever get to zero, because for every one homeless veteran, there are four or five that are on the brink of homelessness. So the number can be close to zero. We've seen that progress is made, and the thing about homelessness is this is a completely preventable, completely curable issue out there, and it takes the nation to really get behind it and get towards that zero number.
Absolutely. And we're speaking with Deborah Snyder, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and pirate, who in 2011 established the Operation Renewed Hope Foundation. Now, Deborah, where do you find time for this? As you said, you work for the DOD, you've got a full-time job there, and you're doing this on the side. I mean, what makes you so driven to take on this challenge?
Well, because every night, you know, when I lay down, I get to look at a ceiling and not the stars, you know. And honestly, I thought I would be burned out by this time, having kids, having essentially two jobs. But knowing that there are veterans out there that are sleeping in vehicles or sleeping under the stars, that's what drives me to help. And that's what drives all the other volunteers and folks that we have helping to make a difference.
Now, if people are interested in volunteering, donating, finding out more about your organization, is there any place that they can go to do that?
Certainly. Portland. Our website is OperationRenewedHopeFoundation.org, and they can go to our website and fill out a form or donate on the donate page, and we certainly appreciate anything that folks can give to us.
We've been speaking with Deborah Snyder, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and pilot, helicopter pilot specifically, in the aviation branch, currently working for the DOD as her full-time job, and in her spare time spending just about all of it with Operation Renewed Hope Foundation. That's the organization she conceived of and established in 2011 to help homeless veterans, and she leads a team of professionals equally dedicated to the challenge. Deborah, we want to thank you so much for joining us today, and more importantly, thank you for the work that you're doing in helping our homeless brothers and sisters get off the street. It's really a great thing that you're doing through your foundation.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to tell your audience what we're doing, and we certainly appreciate their support.
Well, absolutely. Deborah Snyder, again, that's OperationRenewedHopeFoundation.org if you want to find out more about the website. Well, that's the website. Now, you find out more about it by going to it, yes. But to find out more about the actual organization itself, Jonathan Kopanger, you would go to OperationRenewedHopeFoundation.org. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I had my wife back in town. She got back like midnight on Friday, so technically it was Saturday, I guess, if she was gone for 7 days and is back and then leaves again on Tuesday.
I was about to ask, how long is she in town?
Tomorrow. She leaves tomorrow morning back down to Texas. So, you know, one of those things that you deal with. I did a lot of sleeping this weekend. I haven't been feeling good for the last week or two, and, you know, my throat bothering me. And yeah. I think I figured out part of the issue when you turn on the heat. As the winter comes, it dries out the
house.
My
husband's having the same problem.
I woke up this morning with, like, my lips were dried out. My throat was dried out. After I got some water down the throat to moisturize it a little bit and took a shower with the steam, that helped a lot. I'm thinking I may need to go out and get a humidifier today on my way home. I think that's what I need to do.
Hey, before we get on the next subject, to piggyback on the last guest, Friday, I wrote an article about the some stand downs that the VA is helping with.
Okay.
Between now and the end of the year to help to deal with this hunger and homelessness.
Yeah.
You check out my article. There's actually a stand down going on today in Tillamook, Oregon. So if you check out my article, it's Veterans Day kicks off Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week at the VA. I list everything that's going on for the stand downs between now and the end of the year. So if anybody wants to get involved, check it out.
Yeah, I see it. It's right there on the front page for now. It'll probably be gone from there by the end of the day, I would imagine. But you can check it out now. Veterans Day kicks off Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week at the VA. So much going on. And it is such a big issue. And as we talked about with her, and we've talked about with previous guests who've talked about it, there are different types of homeless people, including those who aren't counted, like a lot of the female homeless veterans. They are homeless in a different way. Many of them are mothers, single mothers in many cases. So they find a place to stay, like a friend's house, and they're kind of couch surfing, staying at different places. So are they in a home? Yes. Is it their home? No. So they're kind of in that gray area of homelessness where it's like they have a place to stay, although it's constantly changing, and they have a place to stay until they don't. But yeah, many different types and varieties of homelessness. It's not just the person who, if you closed your eyes and I asked you to picture a homeless veteran and describe him to me, probably a Vietnam era guy, big beard, maybe a ball cap and his old army jacket, begging for change out on the side of the road. Those guys are out there, but there are a lot of other types and a lot of other different people dealing with the same thing as well. Now, Veterans Day was this weekend. Did you take advantage, like Jake did, of any of the free offerings out there?
I did not. I had a little minor procedure on my jaw done last week. And
I
was in a lot of pain this weekend. I actually took a pain pill, which is very rare for me.
Yeah.
So I slept. Veterans Day was a very internal day for me this year.
You celebrated it internally. You
know, I took the dog out and ran her crazy in the morning, and then I was able to sleep for the rest of the day. So that's pretty much my weekend.
Well, here's an interesting thing that we talked about a little bit ago and wanted to get your thoughts on this as someone who... you haven't had access to the Navy exchange system for how long? When did you get out?
97 or 96.
So 20 years.
Yeah.
21 years.
Yeah.
You haven't been able to go there. Now you can electronically on Veterans Day. AFIS, which we knew was doing it. Yeah. And it turns out so is the Navy exchange, the Marine Corps exchange, and the Coast Guard exchange. They just were a lot worse at publicizing it than the other branches were. When we looked at what the AFIS, the difference that they made in kind of shifting to a lot of online sales to kind of take on their competitors in Amazon. They increased their sales significantly. They were like $180 million in the hole 5 years ago annually. Last year, $384 million in profits.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, and those profits go back into the exchange system and DOD. They're essentially a nonprofit enterprise. So when they make money, it goes back into improving the facilities and helping out other DOD facilities. It's a really great thing. You think you're going to take advantage of the ability to shop there online?
You know, I was just thinking about it. Is it still tax-free?
Yep.
See, that's the
tax-free and free shipping.
I'll probably have to, I probably will. But that really kind of, that was one thing that I remember when I got out of the military that really just was frustrating, because you go to the store and you count out exact change.
Yep.
Because what you are, what you see is the price, that's you pay.
That's what it is. You're not paying for tax.
But then you go to the civilian world and it's like, oh, well, yeah, there's 6% or whatever.
I'm just going to wait until the person at the cash register tells me exactly what it is. And for big ticket items in particular, some of the big things that are on there, like that's if you're looking to buy a couch, a 7% sales tax on a $1,000 couch, you're looking at what, $70 or
you're
something like that?
You're asking too much for Monday morning.
Yeah. And it's, hey, man, math, baby. Learn it, live it, love it. I was horrible at math.
Yeah, me too.
I get to college and I dreaded that I had to take two math classes for my initial journalism degree. I took college algebra, the one that you had to take, and I did pretty good. I had a good teacher for it, and he kind of broke it down, and I was like, all right, I get this now. Then I had options of going into a much harder, like Algebra 2 class or all these other things. They had one available at Norwalk Community College in Norwalk, Connecticut, called Math for the Liberal Arts. And I said, you know what? That sounds like my cup of tea. And it was the greatest and most useful math class I've ever taken in my life, because it was all about odds and interest rates and things like that. So if you're interested in either gambling or purchasing a home, it's the kind of
which
class
is kind
that
of the same
fantastic
thing.
And even so, like half the people I was in that class with failed it. And I looked at him and was like, what is wrong?
That would have been me.
I think there was some, like, he had some award for the end, like whoever had the highest GPA at the end of the class. It was broken down on a 100-point scale.
Yeah.
And then he translated into GPA for the school. I had like a 98, and there was one woman who had a 99. So she beat me. And it was just like a basket of like a candy bar or something, like something stupid like that. But I wanted it so badly. Still, I did well there. And that just goes to show, I think, if you're a veteran who's kind of stayed away from going back to school because you had issues when you were going through school, dude, if you look at my high school transcript, whoop, you'll be like, how did they graduate him? How did they, like, I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations has run out, but I think that they could probably charge somebody with something.
At this point, it doesn't matter. You have the diploma, you're fine.
You're like, oh God, just get him out of here, please. Do what you have to do. It says he's joining the Navy. Just get him through. Like, I didn't graduate on time.
Even. Really?
Oh, yeah. I graduated summer school.
Oh.
I didn't get to do well. Technically, they said you could. I think they said I could have done the walk with the thing. I just wouldn't have gotten a diploma. And I was like, nah, I don't really want to do that. I didn't enjoy high school. I didn't walk in any graduation ceremony until, my first getting my associates in journalism from Norwalk Community. And then again, later with my bachelor's from Hofstra. Those are the two first graduation gowns I ever wore in my life.
I graduated a year early in high school only because it wasn't because.
Nerd.
No. I know it, right?
Nerd.
Oh, trust me. There are so many nerd things that go for this. Trust me. But my brother, who was a year and a half older than me, was constantly in trouble.
Oh.
And so when I got to high school, they would go down the roll. They see, there's so many cop-hangers in the world. And so they saw a cop-hanger. And a couple of teachers actually said for me to get out of their class. They were not going to have another cop-hanger in their class.
Wow.
So I had to convince them that I was the complete opposite of my brother, which I was. I wasn't that nice, but I had to become very, very nice in high school. And so I was able to get stuff done a lot sooner because I just really cut all the other stuff out because my older brother was a jerk.
Hey, that happens. Although
he was a freshman for 3.5 years too, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah, I passed him up. That was fun.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. Yeah, I wasn't that bad. I'm like, oh boy. But yeah, I did have to take summer school classes, but then I graduated, I think I was summa cum laude at Norwalk and then cum laude at Hofstra, I think. So graduated with honors
important
from both places. Yeah. Dude, that stuff was so, I didn't care. That was part of it. And some of the kids, though, at school, would look at me and be like, how is your GPA that high? And I was taking a lot of hard classes. Yeah. I took some really interesting but challenging classes. I took a history class where my midterm was like a 13-page long paper.
Ooh.
That was the midterm. The final was like that. 20. But I did. I loved the class. Yeah. It was Western civilization and part of my minor, which was in European studies, which mostly focused on trade and immigration in Europe. Which were some of the classes I took where people dropped out because it was so writing intensive and research intensive, fascinating stuff. But, you know, and they would look at me and be like, well, how have you kept your GPA that high? And I would think it's really not that hard. I show up, I pay attention, I do my stuff. And I think for the veteran out there that's reconsidering or hedging on whether to go back to school or not because they didn't do well in high school, here's what I will tell you. I believe that the skills that you picked up, particularly in regards to discipline and efficiency in the military, will make all the difference in your academic world. Now, absolutely. I'm not saying you're going to be a 4.0 GPA. I'm saying that just your discipline that you've picked up, the ability to remain focused on the task at hand, that is all it takes to pass. You're going to be able to pass. You're going to be at bare minimum a C student if you just show up, pay attention. I knew people who didn't show up, barely paid attention when they did, and still passed through. Now,
there's nothing wrong with being average.
No, well, hey, and you know what? If I believe from my experience and from other veterans that I've talked to, if you show up to every class, if you pay attention in every class, and if you ask questions, that's the other thing that they were, oh God, you're always asking questions. I was like, yeah, because I want to understand
exactly.
And I asked the questions. Also, asking questions led me to getting my first post-college, actually still while I was in college, job. Went on a tour of CBS Radio in New York. And when we had a sit down with the new morning news anchor of the number one news radio station in the nation, and he asked if anybody had any questions, guess who was the only person who had any questions? So then afterwards, he was like, hey, come with me. He brought me into the station manager directly from the tour. Like, hey, this young man is apparently a Navy veteran and is finishing up. He's got a semester left. Think we should bring him on. There you go. It was just like that. Just from being asking questions and raising my hand. People ask, wow, how'd you get a job at 1010 Wins? You know how I got it? By being curious.
I opened my mouth.
I asked questions and asked a lot of questions that he said. Some of them he said, I surprised him. And then he looked at me and said, you're not the average college student, are you? And that voice that you hear from a morning news anchor in New York City is Lee Harris, for those who are from that area. He said, you're not the average college. I said, no, I was in the Navy for 13 years, and now I'm just finishing up my degree. He was like, come with me when we're done here. We'll go talk to
him. There you go.
There you go. That's how it happened. And that's you know, I think there are a lot of people in the veteran community who don't go back to school because of the issues they had in high school.
Yeah.
You probably heard, if you had parents or uncles or aunts or friends who went to college, like, it's totally different. One, it is totally different. I was able to set up my college schedule where I don't think I had more than two classes that started before 9 a.m. during the entire 3.5 years or whatever I was at school.
And see, I was just the opposite. I always tried to do mine so that everything was early in the morning. So, of course, I had dance class and stuff in the afternoon. But I wanted everything done in the morning. Give me class in the morning, I'm fine. Afternoon, I'll fall asleep.
Yeah, I always schedule my dance classes for early in the morning.
And I can tell your dancer body is still there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Never tell you I wanted to be a dancer. Showgirls, baby, jazz hands. Yeah, so, you know, again, when we talk about the secondary education after getting out of the military, more and more people are taking advantage of it. And here's what I would suggest, even. You don't need to go to Yale to start things off. I mean, if you can go there, fantastic. I mean, don't leave the campus because New Haven is a bit of a problem outside of the campus of Yale. But you can start off at your local community college. Pick one course that you're interested in.
Underwater basket weaving.
Oh, well, that's Florida State University, right? They're the ones who offer that. go pick what are you're interested in dance? I mean, there was a dance major at Hofstra University when I was there. Huh. Do you know who was probably their most famous student who never graduated but majored in dance while he was there?
Who?
Christopher Walken.
I knew that.
He was a dance major at Hofstra University. Yep. A lot of famous people went to my school from the New York. James Caan, he did not graduate. Walken didn't graduate. Francis Ford Coppola did. He went to the communication school that I went to. So, yeah, a lot of interesting things there. But take that class that you're interested in. So outside of dance, what are you really just fascinated by? Give me a subject.
Right now would be cooking or history or, Yeah, I would probably do a cooking class.
Cooking is, yeah, those are fun. Yeah. Not every school has them, but some of them do. History, though, that you mentioned, every school has those. And I'm a history nerd. I enjoy it.
Like, me too.
Books that people are assigned in school, I read them for fun. I'll be like, right? Oh, I read that book. Oh, what class was that for? It wasn't for a class. I just saw somebody
reading it.
Yeah, it was good. You know, the last, or the, what was it? The Last Voyage or something was one that I read, which was about prisoners of war in Europe. Basically, they're being moved from camp to camp as the Allies advanced, put into different prison camps. And I read that, and someone was talking about the book. He said, oh, I read that. It was a great book. They're like, oh, you took that class? I was like, no. Never took it, just read the book, saw it at the Navy Exchange, I think, picked it up and was like, oh, it looks good. That kind of thing. So go take a class, just one.
Anything.
And you know what? They'll pay for it, essentially. I mean, the GI Bill will pay for up to what you would pay. There's different things depending on if you're a full-time student. But at like a community college, one class isn't that expensive. They'll pay a portion of it. If you can cover the rest, take that class. And if you do well in it, well, then look at taking the full course load. And then you start getting BAH. You get a basic allowance for housing now, where you essentially, depending on where you're living in this country, it can mean that you don't have to work a job.
See, I didn't realize that that's how that worked out. I didn't realize that they would pay for your house as well. And that is a deal. If you can go back, get your degree. I've already gotten my degree. I don't want to go back. Yeah. And my mother said, you should get your doctorate. No.
Yeah. No, I'm done. They keep sending me emails about this. And I've tried replying a couple of times. Like, please stop sending me these. I'm not coming to grad school. It's just not going to happen. I enjoyed, to an extent, my going back to school time. I enjoyed a lot of the classes, the professors and everything, but I'm done.
Yes.
But I got to where I needed to be. Yes. I got that degree that I needed, and I highly recommend people check that out. And yeah, that basic allowance for housing, the post 9/11 GI Bill, if you served after September 11th, you get E5 with dependents BAH. So look it up through a BAH calculator. You can find it online. For me, I mean, I was in Long Island. I was like $3,000-something a month.
Wow.
Now we get $3,000 a month. Now, what did that cover? Rent, basically.
Yeah.
Not much more.
But
in some parts of the country, you're going to get $1,000 a month in a place where you're only paying $400 a month rent. Well, there's $600 on top of that for covering your expenses. I mean, it's really, it's a good deal, and I highly recommend people take part in it. And I don't really know how we got onto this subject, but I'm glad that we did. And I'm glad that on this Monday, we had such a cool show. Speaking to Ian Carey, the final recipient. I've had trouble with that word all day.
It's a Monday.
Ian Carey received the final Mission Thank You bike from Harley-Davidson. It was great talking to him. And Deborah Snyder, retired Lieutenant Colonel from the United States Army, now operating her wonderful foundation that is working to get homeless vets back under a roof. And again, to find out more about that, OperationRenewedHopeFoundation.org. This is the Morning Briefing. And to find out more about us, go to ConnectingVets.com. We'll be back here tomorrow. Another great show coming your way then. And until then, have a great day.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.